The weather may be cooling down, but the deals are heating up during the Red Hot Sale event at Omaha Steaks. Save 50% site-wide on legendary steaks, beefy burgers, cozy comfort meals, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOTSALE when you shop OmahaSteaks.com today. From tailgating essentials to everyday family favorites, the Red Hot Sale event is your chance to save big on everything you need to serve up fabulous fall flavor. USDA certified tender steaks, plump and juicy air-chilled chicken, easy appetizers, and even cozy comfort meals for those busy weeknights. And every bite is backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't wait. Blaze a trail to OmahaSteaks.com to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the Red Hot Sale event. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOTSALE at checkout. That's OmahaSteaks.com, code HOTSALE. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Donna Adelson's trial hasn't even started, and already the defense strategy is raising eyebrows, and maybe even a few blood pressures as well. Jury selection is just getting underway, but instead of playing things close to the vest like most defendants facing first-degree murder, conspiracy, and solicitation charges do, Donna, the 73-year-old matriarch at the heart of this family drama-turned-homicide case, is reportedly telling the world she wants to testify on her own defense. Donna, the stage is yours. Now, if you followed any major murder trial in your life, you know how rare this is, especially to say it before the trial's even gotten underway. Rare and crazy can be used interchangeably in this case. Defendants usually keep that card hidden if they play it at all. Because the second you take the stand, you've invited the prosecution to pick apart every word, every inconsistency, every decision you've made that they can spin into a narrative of guilt. They'll have every exhibit queued up, every record call, every recorded call, ready to impeach you, every financial record highlighted and tabbed. And they'll walk you straight into each one like they're leading you down a hallway with no doors. But here's Donna, seemingly ready to roll the dice. Is this a calculated move? Is it a bluff to throw the other side off? Or is this Donna being Donna? Convinced she can charm, out-talk, or simply bulldoze her way through a jury the same way she allegedly bulldozed her way through family disputes for decades. And what about her lawyers? She's been through a few. Was this their idea, or are they just along for the ride, knowing they can't legally stop her from making what they might consider a catastrophic decision? There are certain calls in a defense that belong to the client alone, whether to take a plea, whether to go to trial, and whether to testify. No matter how much her counsel warns her, if Donna says she's getting up there, Donna's getting up there. So how do you prepare for that as a defense team? How do you coach someone to survive cross-examination when the evidence includes signed checks to a convicted co-conspirator, coded phone calls that sound more like bad spy fiction than plausible deniability, and a one-way ticket to Vietnam purchased right before your arrest? Joining me to help me unpack what this could mean, both legally and strategically, is our good friend, defense attorney and former prosecutor, Eric Faddis. Eric, let's dig into it.
Totally is. It's uncommon from defense to kind of show their hand pre-trial, because what it does is it allows the prosecutor to prepare for the likelihood that the defense is going to testify, to get sort of an ironclad cross-examination ready to go, got your exhibits queued up, you got your jail calls ready to impeach this person. And so I don't know if it's a bluff, but I just don't see much benefit to tipping off the other side as to what you might do in terms of a real big move in your defense case in chief.
Obviously, this is all speculation. She's innocent until proven guilty. Everything's alleged. What the hell do you think her defense attorney is saying? She's gone through a few of them now. Obviously, that's been an issue. That's been part of the thing, delaying the trial multiple times. The hell's going on there? How do you think those conversations are going?
I think it's peculiar that, there was this kind of a public disclosure that she might testify. And if I was her attorney, I don't play it that way. I play things close to the vest because defense is allowed to do that. And I'm not going to give you any kind of notice except for what's legally required in terms of what I'm going to come at you with. And so, yeah, the fact that they've done that is kind of strange. I wonder if it was at Donna's behest to be so public about this, because it would seem counterintuitive for an attorney to want to publicly disclose this huge move. And can't help but wonder if there's some sort of dissension in the ranks on the defense side.
Like, as in, like, let's get her convicted. Like, she's a horrible client. I mean, obviously, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that. I mean, you can't. I mean, legally, that would be violating, you know. And in no way would I say you've ever done that, but have you ever seen that happen? Have you ever heard of that happening, where someone just has a client? Let's say Donna Adelson is extremely difficult, because I'm guessing she probably is. Let's say we're going to do it this way. No, I'm going to testify. I'm going to testify. No matter how much you're saying this is not a good idea, Donna, at some point you just have to go, okay, whatever the hell you want, Donna, go for it.
You know, at some point on some particular decisions for trial, you have to defer to the client, even if you think it's the worst decision in the world. And one of those decisions is the right to testify. That's right up there with the right to go to trial as opposed to take any kind of offer. There are a number of critical determinations that are vested in the client only. And yet the defense attorney can plead at length with these clients to not do these things. And sometimes the clients do it anyway. And I've certainly seen that happen countless times. And you kind of can, you know, read between the lines and see the expression on the defense attorney's face and know that it wasn't their choice.
Let's assume Donna testifies. Let's take a wild guess that it goes horribly, just as good as Charlie's did. So horribly. Does someone like Donna at the end of the day look back to her attorneys and go, I should have listened to you? Or does someone like Donna at the end of the day go, I knocked that out of the park?
I've seen it play out both ways. I've seen folks who are so audacious, so detached from reality, who think they're just untouchable. And, you know, they think something went great while the jury is like, you know, puking in the back based on what the person said. On the other hand, you know, sometimes they do realize after a while that, oh, I made the wrong call here. And this person, you know, went to law school and has a doctorate degree and has been doing this for years. And you know, maybe I should listen. Those folks.
Oh, coulda, shoulda, woulda, right, Donna? Oh, listening to people who are wiser than you. But the thing is, with people like Donna, there's no one wiser than Donna, at least I think in Donna's mind. That'd be my conjecture on Donna. But if you are her counsel, if you're sitting there and you know, she's going to testify no matter what, it's her right to, she ain't backing down. You want to win the case at the end of the day. You want to do your job as best as you can for your client. Even, you know, she looks guilty as sin. That's why we have defense attorneys. What the hell are you telling her? How are you coaching her? How are you preparing her to take that stand, even though this is a horrible, horrible decision?
One thing you need to do is you need to limit the scope of her testimony. You don't want her up there talking about everything under the sun, you know, her background and the family dynamics and everything else. You want her to get up there and get out what she is insisting on getting out in terms of material evidence helpful for the defense, and then shut it down. You know, because what happens is the prosecutor can only ask about things that are within the scope of the defendant's testimony. And so if you keep that scope narrow, you limit the possible exposure, the possible risk during cross-examination.
But there's a lot here that's going to come out. There's a lot that's going to be a part of this case. There's not a lot of limiting that they're going to be able to do at the end of the day, because some of these are just key tenets of the case. I mean, if we're talking about all the checks, that she signed, being written to Catherine McBona, the buddy of the hitman, the former girlfriend of her son, who's away for murder. How much of the jury, or how much of that will the jury get to hear? Will they understand the full context of who Catherine McBona is? I would think they would, but I know there's sometimes rules and things like that. Well, we can say this, but we can't give that context of it. Where are these lines drawn in a case like this when it comes to cross-examination of Donna Adelson? And where are they not? I mean, how free game are they going to have to go at her? And what do you expect the prosecution to throw at her when they get her on cross?
The judge has a lot of discretion when it comes to evidentiary rules and what is allowed into evidence, what questions can be asked and what questions cannot. There are these rules of evidence that operate as rules, and you know, some judges see them as guidelines. And then the judge kind of has the discretion to say, hey, I think it's fair to ask about that. You go ahead and ask her. And so I think they're going to ask her, certainly, about the paper trail, about the financial transactions, about what, according to the prosecution, is Donna Adelson cutting these checks from the Adelson business to a murderous co-conspirator who is now in prison for murder. And you know, how is she going to explain that stuff away? What would be the possible explanation for why she was cutting checks to this person from the Adelson business, who didn't work for the Adelson business, but happened to be an intermediary in the murder-for-hire plot for which she is on trial? How's she going to answer that?
Now, if Donna Adelson takes a stand, it will be one of the most high-risk, high-rewards moments of the entire trial. And based on what we've heard today, the risks are massive. Eric laid out the defense's nightmare scenario. A client who insists on testifying against the advice of counsel opens the door to damaging cross-examination and gives the prosecution the perfect stage to connect every damning dot in their case. The signed checks to Catherine McBona, the prison phone calls where us problems are discussed like family errands, an immediate chain of communication between Donna and her son, Charlie, and the woman prosecutors say helped arrange the murder, all of that will be fair game. And if the jury gets to hear it directly from Donna's own mouth without the buffer of her lawyers, it's not hard to imagine how quickly charm can curdle into credibility problems. Then there's the Vietnam trip, a one-way ticket to a country without a U.S. extradition treaty purchased right before she was arrested. Sure, the defense can argue she needed a break from the stress, that she and Harvey had been there before and that she was looking for peace of mind. But optics matter. And no matter how you spin it, one-way ticket reads more like consciousness of guilt than spa treatment. The defense can try to style her as a protective, maybe over-involved mother, someone deeply wrapped up in a family drama, but not in murder. The problem is the jury isn't going to hear that in a vacuum. They're going to hear it after days or weeks of testimony, laying out the money trail, coded conversations, and travel plans that line up a little too neatly with the tightening of the investigation. If Donna sits there and stays silent, she doesn't have to personally explain any of it. She gets up and testifies, she does. Once she's in that chair, the prosecution gets to drive. Whether this is a genuine strategy, a bluff, or just Donna's unshakable belief in her own ability to control the story, we're about to find out if it's the move that saves her or the one that hands the jury everything they need to convict. One thing's certain. She testifies it won't be boring. And for better or worse, we'll be here to break down every single second of it. Let me know your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already on YouTube, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Make that same search wherever you download podcasts. If you're not there already, you can take us on the go wherever you are so you can keep up on the coverage of this case. We are going to be bringing you live courtroom coverage every single day of this case. And full breakdowns as well with expert insight. So do press subscribe so you don't miss any of that. It's all coming to you right here from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. My name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.